And welcome back to this episode, which is a part two of the pep talk for parents of only children. This is all coming from the question that was asked in our Facebook group, which was, why can't I handle more? Which I understand that seems kind of negative and not everyone, you know, was asking themselves that question. So we thought, let's frame it more positively, like a little pep talk where we acknowledge why it's challenging to be a parent of any number of kids, and that includes absolutely one kid for various reasons, and just kind of validate all the reasons why that is and frame it in a way that fosters compassion for oneself and can just be a comforting listen to come back to. And so in episode 10, we covered such things as the difference between having multiple and one in terms of the dynamic being one of multiple, where they're playing together ideally, and a parent of one where there are more demands for you to be the playmate. And in that sense, it can be very rewarding and also, let's be honest, very exhausting. So pros and cons, lots of different ways to be a family. Now, part of why this is a part two episode is because as I was recording episode 10, the audio kept dropping and I would record it segment by segment, and then segments just started disappearing. And I was really surprised and confused because we've never had that problem with Anchor before. I mean, we have ads for Anchor because it's been a good podcast host. So I don't know what's going on. It's my first time recording on my computer. Usually I use my phone. But anyway, I just wanted to clarify a few things if you're coming here right after listening to episode 10. So first of all, I believe that this dropped, but I was, as an addendum to the part about having one child versus multiple in terms of being the playmate and them having a playmate, I wanted to acknowledge that, as I just heard from some parents in my life the other day, sometimes the siblings, even when they're close in age, just truly do not get along, unfortunately, for long periods of time. And as we discussed in episode 8, there is a danger of idolizing a fantasy that just either doesn't exist or may not work out in that way for us. So we don't know what it would be like if there was another playmate, and we're just going to have to make the best of it. And I always say, as an only child myself, it will be fine. Truly, truly. It's just a different way to be a family. And so I wanted to add that because these clips just kept dropping. And then also in episode 10, just continuing with the recap, we talked about how isolating it is to be a parent of any number of children and how abnormal that is in the course of human history, in global society, and for mammals such as humans, and how almost insane it is to expect a mother or father or caregiver to not suffer and struggle under the current Western situation where so many of us are without family nearby, without any sources of mentorship or practical help or support, which is very abnormal in the global sense. And so I talked about that and what else. And then we started to get into mental health. So that's where we're going to pick up, is with the mental health. So in the last episode, we left off on anxiety. So now we're going to talk a little bit about depression very briefly. For those of you that don't know, part of my previous life was working in a mental health setting, especially as a crisis worker and program coordinator for a crisis program. And I have depression. A lot of parents in our group, I mean, not all, obviously, but have chosen, or a factor in their family size is related to mental health. With depression, one of the biggest things I hear about, and in my own experience, is energy. Having the energy and the interest to be as present as we would like, and being interested in our child and having the energy to do what needs to do to care for ourselves and for others. And this is no small thing. And as I said at the very end of the last episode, episode 10, mental health is not an issue of will. It often has to do with the organ of the brain, just like diabetes has to do with a certain organ that handles. that handles insulin. Shoot, you know, it keeps getting cut off as I'm recording. I guess there's a 5-minute cutoff. So continuing on, mental health is not a matter of will. Seeking help for it is a sign of strength, not weakness. You wouldn't yell at someone with a broken leg to run because you can clearly see that they have an injury. When you've been through trauma, when your neurotransmitters are off, when you have a genetic mental health condition in the brain wiring, or any reason why you have a clinical mental health condition, it's just like when any other organ of the body is diseased. Okay, that's my take on it. And so with depression, as I said, energy is such a big issue. And it, again, as I said last time, it seems so brave and strong to take that into account with your parenting. We all want to be, you know, I guess, joyful, present parents. At least that's what I hear from people. And that's a wonderful gift to give our kids, to be attuned and well connected with them and so on and so forth, if that's something that you prioritize. And I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves. Honestly, with depression, just making it through each day is a victory. And if anyone here is diagnosed with depression, I honor you. I would absolutely love it if you could take a moment to honor yourself and all that you are able to do, and forgive yourself and show yourself grace for what you're not able to do at this time, because all we can do is our best. And depression is a beast. It is no joke. And I believe there is grace that covers what we can't do. We just do our best, and we're all trying to survive, especially now. But absolutely, depression is a major factor that would make parenting difficult. And I know that even though I have a support system, from time to time I've reached out to my local county listening line for additional support, just from an anonymous, usually a trained volunteer or someone who is another adult to just kind of vent off of or to listen. So you might, I don't know where you live. I think a lot of people from different countries are actually listening, but if your county or region has a listening line, that would be something to consider. So yeah, again, if you're quote unquote only able to handle one child with depression, I think that's a huge victory, honestly. And I don't want this to devolve into platitudes, but I just hope that people in your life understand all that it is that you're doing and all that you're up against, and sort of the battle that you're in, and that you're able to find all of the support that you need. Okay, so next I'm going to talk about executive dysfunction. This is something that I wish was a household term and I wish was discussed more. It has to do with planning. Well, first of all, prioritizing, identifying priorities, planning, sticking to a plan, being able to retrieve and act on relevant information in a timely fashion, being able to switch tasks as needed, and discern again what needs to get done, and having the ability to focus and execute what needs to get done. All of those functions fall under the umbrella of executive functions. And those have to do with the prefrontal lobe of our brains. Now, if you have a condition which influences or impacts the blood flow to the front of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, which might maybe include either a traumatic brain injury, ADHD, and sometimes being on the autism spectrum, among other things, then it might be difficult to do any of those things. Doesn't mean we can't get things done. And I have no embarrassment at saying I'm also diagnosed with ADHD. It's a very misunderstood condition. It's almost considered like a joke, but it does absolutely have to do with the prefrontal cortex of your brain, as well as your level of dopamine. Having low dopamine can make it difficult to activate tasks. So, for example, staying on top of the laundry or bills, anything that is boring, because folks with ADHD and similar conditions have what's called an interest-based nervous system. And one of the misunderstandings about ADHD is people think it's just, again, like some kind of joke, like you're a cartoon character, you know, like a dog chasing a squirrel and you can't focus on anything. That's not actually true. It's a regulation issue, an issue of regulating attention, meaning that if something interests you, you can focus on it almost effortlessly. In fact, there's a term called hyperfocus, which describes what happens when people with ADHD and other executive functioning disorders are almost obsessively focused with something. That's why there are so many successful entrepreneurs with ADHD and entertainers and athletes and innovators, because they are focused on what they're passionate about. Now, the day-to-day executive functions that support that life, again, perhaps the bills, the administration, the cleanliness, particularly organization, physical organization, can be very difficult if you have weak executive functioning skills due to your brain wiring and chemistry. All of these things play important roles in running a household and or holding down a job, and in parenting, you know, triaging things for your child, helping to plan outfits if they're young, or staying on top of shopping for necessary goods and services for your home. Again, the bills and budgeting and sticking to a budget, having discipline around that. People that do not have executive functioning disorders sometimes overly moralize them and think, again, it's a matter of will. But you know, an explanation is not an excuse. And I know that I am also in a group for mothers with ADHD. And yep, a lot of us can be hard on ourselves, and some are even wondering if parenthood is something they would be able to perform adequately, or I don't know if perform is the right word, but in terms of being regulated, because sometimes with executive dysfunction related conditions, it can also be difficult to compartmentalize what you're feeling and to focus on what needs to be done. We tend to have very deep emotions. And I think, again, it is such a responsible thing to take that into consideration with your family size and your ability to be the kind of parent that a child would need. Now, since we all already have one child, presumably we're parents of only children, if any one of us has an executive dysfunction condition, diagnosed or undiagnosed, then yes, of course, it's going to make things more difficult. And I really think compassion for oneself is needed. Support. These are among some of the most misunderstood conditions in society. I am actually a certified ADHD life coach, and so I care very passionately about this. And I have seen so many adults, especially yeah, I'm going to have to watch for that cutoff again. It got cut off, but I think I was saying I've seen so many adults, I guess, be hard on themselves. I lost my train of thought. Just a few more things on that. Oftentimes, people with ADHD and autism, as well as sensory processing disorder, have, well, sensory issues. And so when you think about it, when you have a child, there is the noise, there is all the different stimuli that comes from everything the child is doing and saying, and having to pay attention and respond to all that while dealing with your own feelings and your own needs, taking care of yourself, taking care of the child. It is legitimately harder for some people just due to how we're wired, and that is okay. That does not make us bad people. Again, I think it is so strong to just be self-aware and do what we can and do it well. And so I wanted to wrap up by sharing something a little bit personal that has helped me. Before I go into it, just a little bit of a disclaimer. I'm going to talk about my faith. Now, if you have listened to any of the other 10 episodes, you know that this is absolutely a safe and inclusive space for all. That includes whether you're religious or not, whether you are Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Baha'i, Buddhist, Hindu, or any other faith, and whether you are part of the LGBTQ community. Now, if you have been harmed by institutional religion, particularly by Christianity, I am truly sorry. That's not going to help you, but that is how I feel. So if, you know, this is a trigger for you due to religious abuse, you might want to skip just the last couple minutes, but I would be remiss if I didn't include something that has been so incredibly helpful to me in my journey to love myself and be the kind of parent that I'm becoming. I'm very much a work in progress, very much a work in progress, but I may not be where I want to be, but thank God I'm not where I used to be, you know? Anyway, so here I go. So as a Christian, in my case, a Catholic Christian, these are some of the things that have helped me in my parenting of an only child and that I have found really comforting and clarifying. So, sorry, my computer is going to shut off automatically in 2 minutes. So I'm like, well, got to get it out. I guess the first thing is accepting what you can change and surrendering the rest to your higher power, which in my case is God. I believe in a loving God. So that's the serenity prayer. And then another thing is the idea that if you do something with effort and love, that matters more than the outcome. That is something that I learned from Saint Faustina, who is my patron saint. I know some Christians were like, what? Saints? But that has been so incredibly comforting to me. And it is biblical because in the Bible, there is a verse about if you lack love, nothing you do means anything, even if it's helping people, even if it looks good. Without love, it's nothing. And so in that spirit, there are no small things. If you made it through the morning without losing your temper at your child, if you guys shared a laugh together, if you said you're sorry when you messed up, if you cooked a meal or washed a dish, all of these things matter. And not only do they matter, but they have more meaning, I believe, to God than if we had done some fancy thing, something that's productive in the eyes of the world. It's great to achieve, but there are no small things. Something done with great love, something that the world considers small, I believe it has eternal consequences. I believe it is meaningful. And even when that involves overcoming some of our own battles, maybe a temporary victory over our temper or our selfishness or whatever it is that we struggle with, we all have something or trigger, even when the very battle is simply to show yourself grace and choose not to beat yourself up when you make a mistake, I believe that that's meaningful. And so in that sense, comparing ourselves to others is really kind of insane. I mean, we all do it. But we never know what sort of invisible battles that people are fighting. And we don't know the calculus of, I guess, the worth or merit or love or effort that is happening in people's actions. In my view, God's value system is very different from the majority of the world. The world which values title and, you know, I guess, money. I mean, obviously we need money to survive, but just, you know, I mean, one from any faith can see how warped humans' value system, you know, what we're inclined to. And so I only say all that because if there are no small things, then there are many things worth celebrating and worth honoring in our day. And I, along with that, another teaching that has personally helped me is the belief that you don't have to do anything to earn God's love. It's a gift. That's my understanding, and that is very countercultural, right? It seems like we have to have a certain resume and behave a certain way for people to love us. But in my view, people are not God, and people will let us down. But I have found, and I'm using I pronouns because I truly do not want to alienate anyone of any background, but I'm just being totally honest with you. I have found so much comfort in that, knowing that my worth does not come from what I do. And along with that, there's something else about being a parent of an only child, which as it relates to faith has been so helpful to me in my parenting and my personal growth and evolution. And that is the idea of redemptive suffering, which quite honestly is something I'm still learning about. But it has blown my mind. And this is, and might be present to some extent in other faiths, but it is a Christian teaching that has to do with, there's a Bible verse about, in Christianity, we believe that Jesus paid the price for our sins and is the mediator and gives us eternal life. That is our understanding in Christianity. And I personally do believe that. I don't have the verse in front of me, but the Apostle Paul talks about how we can take part in that, even though Christ is the one that secured it. Our actions and our choices still matter. Not that we're earning God's love, but that we, as his children, we're part of the human family, and we're all connected. We're all one body. So as such, what one does can influence the other one as part of a, just like a biological system, you know, like the roots of, and the leaves and the branches of a plant all go together, or the heart and, you know, all of the organs and bones all work together of a body. We are interconnected in humanity. And so with that, this idea of redemptive suffering has to do with grace and how we, I believe, can unite with Christ and what he did for us on the cross. That's what my understanding is when he asked us to carry our personal cross. So for some of us, we've been through a lot to have our one child, and we are so content and just grateful to be parents at all. And I think all of us feel that way on some level. However, for some of us, having an only child, when we had a different dream for what our lives would look like and for our family size, that is a cross. And so the world may view that as, oh, that's bad. You didn't get what you wanted, because it's all about getting what you want. It's all about you and, you know, living your best life and what you want. My understanding of a Christian perspective would be more that there is an opportunity here for some redemptive suffering, which can benefit yourself and benefit others immensely. And that comforts me a lot. And the way that that works in my limited understanding is that we can lift up anything that we did not want and did not choose and cannot change to the cross of Jesus and join it with his cross. Because his cross is I guess the technical term is efficacious. It's such a mystery, but it has to do with it. It's made so many graces available to us. And so when we pray in this way and we unite with what he's already done for us, we open up graces for other people in a very amazing, spiritual, deep, real way. Let me give you a specific example before I go off the deep end here. So there was a teenager in France in the 1890s who understood redemptive suffering and wanted to help someone in this way. There was a man who had committed a terrible crime. I think a murder was involved that he had done, and he was sentenced to death. So she read about him in the news, didn't know him from Adam, and this teenager decided, and this is an absolutely true story documented, she decided that she was going to offer up anything that she did not want and did not choose to the cross for the benefit of this man. And so, to make a long story short, things like she didn't get the dessert she wanted, or maybe she wasn't in a very comfortable chair, or maybe she even was like, you know what, I'm not going to lie back in this chair. I'm going to take a few minutes sitting up. She took it kind of extreme. I think she was like not putting her back against a chair all day. But she offered up anything that she could, things that the world might consider nothing, small, you know, maybe doing a chore she didn't want to do, or what have you, to the cross to benefit this man, this convicted murderer, criminal. And so when he went up for his execution, he had never shown any signs of repentance, but as the executioner was raising the, I suppose they had a guillotine in those days or whatever means of beheading or hanging or whatever. And this man was about to die. He grabbed the cross of, I suppose the priest was present, and he grabbed the crucifix and he kissed it. And so the teenager rejoiced that this was her first spiritual child. And this teenager is Saint Therese of Lisieux, who, although she died at a young age, 24, she offered up small things and lived great love with small things and with trust, which many of us believe meant a lot in God's eyes. And her prayers were powerful because they were sincere. And we all, it doesn't matter how productive or how much we can handle or not handle, we can all have those kinds of prayers, you know? And I do believe many people of goodwill of many faiths can have very powerful prayers and can teach, we can all teach each other a lot. And I should have said this at the top, but if you are of a different faith and that has comforted you in terms of your situation with your family, feel free to come on and share. This isn't an exclusively Christian show. But my point is, some of us have one child and we wanted more children. We are so grateful for our child, but we wanted larger families. We envisioned more children, and I realize this isn't the same, and I don't mean to sugarcoat those valid feelings, but we all have the opportunity to have spiritual children. Let's not waste our suffering. Let's not waste it. Let's not waste those painful feelings that may come upon us when we see a child that might have been the age of the child that we lost or the pregnancy that we lost. When we yearn for something that we will never have or someone we will never hold in our arms. That is real. That is powerful. I could have said something like, you know, just trust God, just pray, and that's true, but you hear that, it's cliche. Something about this redemptive suffering has really helped me, and I had to share it in case it would help another. Because now I don't waste it. There's meaning. There's meaning to those feelings. It's not just, I don't know, some kind of meaningless pain. I can use it to help someone else. So who will you offer up those feelings for if you choose to unite them with the cross? And what impact will you have? You may not even know until heaven and we're together in eternity and you meet the person that you helped, just the way I believe that Saint Therese, the French teenager at the time, met that man. We don't know, but God's ways are not our ways. And I don't mean, to sugarcoat any pain that people may be experiencing, but if he allowed this situation, he can use it. And so redemptive suffering and offering that sort of prayer, uniting any sort of suffering around family size, disappointments or pains or losses to the cross, has been a meaningful and effective way to use those feelings and challenges for the benefit of the world. And the world needs our prayers, I believe. I'm sorry if this sounds preachy. That is not my intention. But I had to share that, and I believe that it will come to whoever it's meant to go to, and that's great. So, listen, there's a lot we could have covered that we didn't cover in terms of that whole question that prompted these two episodes about, quote, why can't I handle more? Or more positively, the pep talk. But we've talked particularly in this episode about mental health and about faith as it applies to our situation. And so whatever limitations we may have, whatever struggles we may have, we're not powerless at all. Our small things matter. We have the power of prayer. We have the power of love. We have the power to reach out for help when we're struggling with overwhelm or illness. And I know a lot of us feel so alone, especially in COVID, but it is my deep and earnest hope that this pair of episodes have met you where you're at and uplifted you in any way. And I know what I'm hearing and what Kathy and I are hearing has also inspired us as well. So thank you for that. And we will be back next week.